As soon as he was alone once more, the enormity of his attempted crime seemed to overwhelm him. Mr. Cooper poured away the laudanum and smashed the basin. And so he went to bed, but sleep did not come. At 3 o'clock in the morning, Mr. Cooper took a penknife and tried to stab his own chest. The blade broke off squarely every time. By 7 o'clock, Mr. Cooper was still awake and the examination was looming. He locked the door and, using his garter binding as a noose, hung himself from the bed, but the iron frame bent. So he tried to hang himself again. This time, the frame broke. He tried again. He swung the noose from the door and kicked the chair away. This time, Mr. Cooper lost sense altogether, and when he awoke, he thought that he was in hell. He crawled into his bed. This time, the garter had broken. The laundress had heard the bang as Mr. Cooper had fallen to the floor. She entered through the door that Mr. Cooper had thought was locked tight. She saw the garter, the chair, the blood pooling beneath his eye, and sent for his friends. The examination was cancelled. The key of office was removed, and Mr. Cooper's legal, witty friends quietly slipped away.
William Cooper to Martin Madden, the 19th of July, 1765. A life of 33 years spent without God in the world, passing upon others, and upon myself too for a Christian, with immoralities enough to stain me as black, and sink me as deep as ever sinner fell, were circumstances which might well drive me to that despair in which you saw me, when once it had pleased God to let loose my conscience upon me, and to make me sensible of my wickedness.
Mr. Cooper lost all recollection of the legal affairs and of the examination. He awoke instead to the realization of his damnation, and for the first time he believed that he deserved nothing less. His brother John came to be with him and sat next to him during many tormenting dreams. His cousin also came. He was a minister by the name of Martin Madden. He moved Mr. Cooper to Knightsbridge. After being there for 8 months, Mr. Cooper was no better. He heard the words of the Reverend Madden. He heard the gospel, but he could not believe that it was for such as he. So the Reverend Madden placed Mr. Cooper into the care of Dr. Nathaniel Cotton of St. Albans. The godly doctor, a widower past his 60th year, understood more than mere medicine. He wrote in one of his poems, "A satirist in Roman times, when Rome, like Britain, groaned with crimes, asserts it for a sacred truth that pleasures are the bane of youth. That sorrows such pursuits attend, or such pursuits in sorrows end, that all the wild adventurer gains are perils, penitence, and pains." The giddy round of pleasures in Mr. Cooper's life had not prepared his heart for the sorrow which he now endured. He was strongly convicted of his sins, and lived for long months under the expectation of just and instantaneous judgment. He dreaded it, and yet at the same time desired it. During this time, he composed a poem expressive of the state of his soul.
"Hatred and vengeance, my eternal portion, scarce can endure delay of execution. Wait with impatience, readiness to seize my soul in a moment. Damned below Judas, more abhorred than he was, who for a few pence sold his holy master, twice betrayed, Jesus me, the last delinquent, deems the profanest. Man disavows, the deity disowns me. Hell might afford my miseries a shelter, therefore hell keeps her ever-hungry mouths all bolted against me. Hard lot, encompassed with 1,000 dangers, weary, faint, trembling with 1,000 terrors, I'm called, if vanquished, to receive a sentence worse than a Byron's. Him the vindictive rod of angry justice sent quick and howling to the centre headlong. I, fed with judgment in a fleshly tomb, am buried above ground.
Early in December 1763, Mr. Cooper's conviction of sin was lifted. And soon after, he was deeply affected by the words of the Apostle Paul in Romans. Whom God hath set forth to be a propitiation through faith in his blood, to declare his righteousness for the remission of sins that are past through the forbearance of God. Peace flooded into the heart of Mr. Cooper. How blessed thy creature is, O God, when with a single eye he views the lustre of thy word, the dayspring from on high. Through all the storms that veil the skies and frown on earthly things, the sun of righteousness he eyes with healing on his wings. Struck by that light, the human heart, a barren soil no more, sends the sweet smell of grace abroad, where serpents lurked before. The soul, a dreary province once of Satan's dark domain, feels a new empire formed within and owns a heavenly reign. The glorious orb whose golden beams the fruitful year control, since first obedient to thy word he started from the goal, has cheered the nations with the joys his orient rays impart. But Jesus, 'tis thy light alone can shine upon the heart. Chapter 3. From St. Albans to Olney. In June 1765, Mr. Cooper left the care of Dr. Cotton. A good man by the name of Samuel Roberts refused to be parted from Mr. Cooper, so Sam escorted his master from St. Albans to Huntingdon. Between them sat a child of 8, Dick Coleman. Mr. Cooper had discovered little Dick. He was near starving in the streets of St. Albans through the drunken habits of his father. Mr. Cooper took Dick with him to train him and give him a better start in the world. John Cooper was a minister in Cambridge, so he arranged for his brother to take lodgings in Huntingdon. The situation presented a challenge which Mr. Cooper had never before known: housekeeping. Some weeks he bought far too much food and had to give it away. Others he brought too little, but he ran out of money before the stomachs were full. During these 2 months of lodging, Mr. Cooper became friends with my son, and indeed with all of my family. My husband took in student lodgers. When one batch had departed, and before another had time to arrive, Mr. Cooper took their place in our home. It was more than advantageous for the relief of his housekeeping duties. It was the 11th of November, almost 28 years to the day, since Mr. Cooper had last enjoyed family life.
William Cooper to Joseph Hill, the 5th of November, 1765. You may remember, perhaps, that as we walked on the morning of your arrival here, towards the bridge end of town, we heard a harpsichord from a parlour window on the right hand. That is the house.
That first winter passed very happily. Mr. Cooper was always turning my thoughts to matters of religion. This was a blessing to me, because my husband was not in sympathy with my recent conversion. He did not believe in the divinity of Jesus Christ, or in the infinite merit of his sufferings. I know that I appeared quite enthusiastic to Morley in my new love of the Scriptures, but in the company of such a kindred soul as Mr. Cooper, there was mutual understanding. My husband's lack of Christian convictions did not prevent him from placing a great emphasis upon religion within our home. We read the Scriptures, or sermons, from 9 till 11 o'clock each day. 11 until 12 was the hour of divine service. Then, between 12 and 3 o'clock, we did a great many things, depending on the time of the year and the weather. In fair seasons, we would walk or ride, In the winter, we were content to read indoors. Mr. Cooper loved books. His own volumes had been lost to him when he was carried from the temple. So, from our collection, he chose those which promoted godliness. I recall that at this season, the works of James Hervey held a special place for him. After dinner, we talked or sang. The Reverend Martin Madden had sent to his cousin a copy of his collection of psalms and hymns with music. So we often gathered around the harpsichord together. Tea was followed by an invigorating 4-mile summer walk or winter conversation by the fire. Before retiring, we gathered once more for hymns or a sermon, followed by family prayers. It was such a peaceful time for us all. I reflect now that if Mr. Cooper had followed his half-dreamt idea of becoming a monk in France, he could hardly have known such sanctuary as we enjoyed in Huntingdon. Mr. Cooper even contemplated whether he should follow in his father's footsteps and become a minister, but after much thought, he decided that while his zeal was present, the necessary gifts were not.
William Cooper to Joseph Hill, the 11th of February, 1766. I love the people I am with, and they love me, and there is not a family in England that could afford me such or greater comfort, however, during the interruption and suspension of almost every connection besides. I hear from you and Lady Hesketh. There are others to whom I have written, but a wintry kind of indifference seems to have frozen up their ink bottles. I wish them a gentle thaw, and wait for it with patience.